I'm Mickey Halpin. I'm a freelance writer, and I'm the moderator of the panel. This is the panel about, do you blog on the first date? If you're in the wrong room, you can leave now. I wanted to ask how many people here have blogs? And how many of you would feel okay if I was reading them out loud to everyone right now? Surprisingly, bare. Okay. Because these women do that kind of stuff every day, and a lot, they've had a lot of interesting feedback from their bearing their personal lives. Emily Listfield is nodding. She writes the Sex and the Single Mom blog for redbook.com, which covers her life as the single mother of a 13-year-old in New York City. In the past, she's been the editor-in-chief of Fitness Magazine, and her work has appeared in the New York Times, Allure, Self, New York Magazine, Harper's Bazaar, and numerous other publications. She has a novel coming out in October called Waiting to Surface. Rachel Kramer-Bussell, who's on my right, writes a blog called The Lusty Lady that can be found at lustylady.blogspot.com. She also has a G-rated blog at cupcakestakethecake.blogspot.com. Rachel is the senior editor at Penthouse Variations, and her erotic stories have been published in over 100 anthologies, including The Best American Erotica 2004 and 2006. This month she has two new anthologies coming out called He's on Top and She's on Top. And since I read Rachel's blog yesterday, I happen to know that she's already been asked out on a date while here at South by Southwest. And she already blogged about it. Melanie Boyer, who's in between Emily and Rachel, writes the About Last Night blog for the Washington City Paper, and it's found at washingtoncitypaper.com. This is the bio she gave me. Melanie Boyer is a retired journalist, a recovering high school teacher, and a returned Peace Corps volunteer. Since starting About Last Night in December 2005, she has outed two men as cheating bastards, been stalked once, star-fucked three times, had four erotic poems written about her, been called a disease-ridden whore twice, posted one naked picture of herself, and lost one job. She would be a big fat liar if she said her ego didn't love every minute of it. Alyssa Shalasky, who is on the end, writes the blog AlyssaCentric for Glamour.com. She's a 29-year-old freelance writer who's written for The New York Post, Black Book, Self, Gotham, Modern Bride, and more. Until recently, she was a senior reporter at Us Weekly, covering everything from Bennifer to the Oscars to Sundance and Survivor. Last summer, she left Us to write a blog for Glamour called See Alyssa Date. She wrote about her romantic life, and readers voted on what she would do next. She came to her senses and changed the blog to evolve into a more lifestyle-oriented space where the topics include friends, work, women's issues, and the world in general. So I guess my first question is, why on earth would anyone blog about their personal life?
You know, just talking to each
other. Put your mouth close to the mic.
Okay. I don't think any of us realized how detrimental to our personal lives it would be when we first started. I think you think you're doing something alone in a room and hitting send and don't realize the effect it will have until it's too late.
Anything else?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was sort of pitched to me and some of the other people on the panel as like a really cool, sassy freelance gig. And it was for a while, the nature of a blog is so much bigger than that. Like the blogosphere and whatever, the people who are reading your blog and the gawkers of the world, it just explodes into something much more than just like a sweet little dating blog.
I actually applied for this position. It was advertised, and I applied, and they followed my blog for about a month, and that's when I started. So I did it by choice. I knew it was going to be a dating blog, and I knew I was going to have to air my entire personal life. And it's definitely had its effects, where men either run straight towards me or they run away from me, and we get what they call "you're going to fuck me six ways from Sunday" glaze over their eyes. When they go, oh, they find out you're a sex columnist, and all of a sudden they think they've got your number. They know what kind of girl you are, and they know what you're going to do. And that I had anticipated to a degree, but when I signed on, I knew that this was going to have its consequences, and there were going to have to be rules. Like, first I started out with, if I'm dating you, I won't blog about you without your permission or unless you read the piece first. That dissolved when... Because no man is going to approve for you to write, I guess, your perception of the reality. But so then it changed to, I won't write about you until you dump me, and then you're fair game. But I knew what I was getting into, and I knew that it was going to have personal consequences, and that there were going to have to be some rules. I was going to have to be careful about the people in my personal orbit that I didn't want to stomp on. And I was going to have to be ready for the fallout. And that I had to make a deal with myself that if I was going to do this, my ego had to be big enough to keep me doing it.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the rules. I think you all, each of you has a different sort of like ethical set that you've set for yourself. So maybe you want to talk a little bit about that.
I always promised every guy, like, I'll never embarrass you. I'll never humiliate you, which I stuck to. And there's plenty of, you know, really private things I could have said to humiliate a lot of them. But yeah, I'll always keep it positive, and I'll always keep it friendly, and I'll always be kind. And I stuck to that. But, you know, your definition of what's nice and ethical and kind is different for everybody. So there's, I think, inevitably, whatever rules you have, it's just like it gets so blurry, and what feels okay to you might really like strike a sensitive spot in a guy that you had no idea. You were like, oh my God, I thought that you'd be flattered by that. And in the meantime, like, they hate your guts and they're like going to therapy or whatever.
I think the wavering rule for me is whether you actually tell someone before you, say you're going on a first date, do you tell them ahead of time or not? And that's been a wavering line for me.
I used to write a sex column that got had a lot more readers than my blog. So I feel like, and with that, I kind of felt sort of, as a journalist, like I wanted to really, I didn't want to clean it up, like, you know, say something nice if that's not necessarily what I meant. And I also found that people would freak out over really little things that they thought were identifying characteristics. Like one time I wrote that this guy, that nothing actually happened, but anyway, I wrote that he had a Murphy bed, and he was like, could you change that to a sofa? And I think he thought that he was the only person in New York who had a Murphy bed. So I found that people kind of freaked out over little things. And so to me, blogging, I don't necessarily have hard and fast rules, and I'm often doing it very in the heat of the moment. It's not like I take hours and hours to compose the blog. I just kind of write it, and I often write it, you know, like late at night or early in the morning, or just, you know, I just sort of purge. So I don't really necessarily have rules, but I have sometimes later gone back and edited things or taken things out that, you know, the more I thought about it, the more I wasn't really sure I wanted that information out there, or my feelings changed, and I kind of felt like it wasn't necessarily fair to have like my first instincts be what gets posted.
I the rule that I've made for myself is that I always tell a man that I'm going out with what I do, because I feel like it's only fair to him that he knows that he could potentially be exposed. And at first I would say, okay, I need to break this to you. And that didn't go well. And so then we changed my approach to, I do this thing and it's really cool and it's really fun. And then some of them would be, they go, oh. And then other ones get that glaze where they're like, you're a dirty girl. And I never use names, and I limit the details. And I don't blog in real time. If I'm dating a man, I say, I won't date about you. I won't write about you while we're dating. But once you dump me, you're fair game.
So what do you write about while you're dating? Say you're dating someone for a few months. Uh-huh. Well, I'm curious, because I've made that mistake.
Well, what I found is that I blog every day. I blog Monday through Friday. And sex is a part of everything that we do, but a girl has to sleep. You can't date every night. And so what I've done is I found sex in everything, and I've expanded it to love on every range of the spectrum. The blog has become, I call it the wet spot that nobody wants to sleep on. Mm-hmm. And it's everything leading up to that. I write about, my father died in May, and I blogged his entire death. And I blogged a woman watching her husband die after 37 years. And I blogged a daughter watching her father die. And I blogged about how my parents lost their virginity together in the front seat of a Corvair. Mm-hmm. And so I blogged about father-daughter love. I blogged about my brother and I taking care of my father. So I blogged about sibling love. And all that. And people wrote in and they're like, this isn't about sex. And I said, you know what? It's not. But we're very complex creatures. And if we boiled this down every day to nothing but sex, we would be doing ourselves a huge emotional disservice. So what I do when I'm dating someone and I'm not writing about them, I'm writing about the guy that I rode home on the bus with, and how by the time I got off the bus, we had a whole family, and we had a minivan and a life. And people will relate to that, and I'll blog about sex and politics. And like somebody said, you know, we can't impeach President Bush over Iraq, but why doesn't somebody just give him a good blowjob and we can get him out of the office? So there are different aspects of it, the politics and the love and the experiences, and but it does get hard. I have to get creative sometimes.
I mean, Melanie, your blog is specifically about sex and dating, and I think Emily and Alyssa, yours are more about dating and perhaps less about sex, so maybe you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think what has struck a chord with the people reading it, or I've gotten the most response to, is where dating intersects with other issues in your life, and where you come across conflicts that a lot of women face, and how you balance, for me being a single parent and having a romantic and sexual life, has gotten a lot of rise out of women, and I think those are interesting areas to explore. So that's what I try and do.
Yeah, I won't write about sex. I won't write about anything past kissing. And it upsets my family. It's like the guys, they stop trusting you physically. So that was a good rule that I made that I stuck to. But, I mean, the downside of that is when you're in a relationship, especially like a new relationship, so much of it is about hooking up and if it's good and like problems or like, you know, heat. So I found like, while I was talking about dating these guys, I was trying to like send my readers these like telepathic messages, like these in between the line things, but they're like, some of them are so literal they like weren't getting it. So unfortunately the nature of the blogs would suffer and be kind of like blah and G-rated. But I mean, it was just like always such a balance between keeping these guys around, keeping them happy, keeping my editors happy, keeping the readers happy, keeping my parents happy. And I know, like, a lot of people, like, I think probably you guys would say, like, a real writer or, like, a great writer somebody writing about sex and love doesn't care what anybody thinks like that. You just have to not care. You have to just let it out. And that's why, like, I know I'm not a good sex columnist because I do care too much.
If you do it in real time. I was trying to do it more in real time where you're seeing the person while you're writing about it. And I think historically in literature that's done that, there's a lag time. And this is a whole new area where things are happening in real time where you go out at night and it's on the internet in the morning. And that's a very different, that changes the nature of autobiographical writing, I think.
Have you guys ever been on a date and found yourself writing the blog entry in your head while you were on the
date? Totally. The guy who couldn't pay for dinner a couple of months ago, that went up that night.
Yeah. But I think, you know, Emily, you talked about this a little in the emails that we had leading up to this panel, and that dance that you have to do between, you know, limiting the damage to your personal life, but having to be extremely honest in order to write something meaningful and to have it be of service to your readers, because ultimately these columns are entertainment/service writing, as they call it in the industry. So how do you guys, you know, what do you think really resonates with your readers? I mean, you said, obviously, single mom stuff. What kinds of stuff gets the biggest response when you write about it? Rachel?
Well, I think for me, because I just have my own blog, I actually feel like by doing it in real time, it's mostly for me and secondarily for people reading it. And of those people reading it, I would say my first priority is, like, to my friends. Like, when I'm thinking about potential readers, it's my friends who kind of would know what I'm talking about, even if I'm not explicitly saying exactly who I'm talking about or what I'm talking about. And then I do think that kind of creates a gap for people who I don't know personally, but I think that's sort of how I handle some of the anonymity. But I think I work out a lot of things as I'm writing it down, you know, maybe stuff that I sort of thought, but then, you know, more stuff comes out about it. And, so I find that process really cathartic, and that kind of goes back to the question of why do it in the first place. And I want to say, related to what you said, I mean, I do think all of what we write about relates to how we feel about dating and sex. I mean, it's all part of sort of the same thing, because I think it's sort of this myth that if you write about sex or write about dating, that's all you care about. Of course it's not, and of course everything else happening in your life is going to affect how you feel. Like, if you're just lost your job, probably not going to, you might feel like going out and getting drunk, you're probably not going to feel like going out on that like exciting first date. So I feel like it does all relate.
I actually had my an experience like that where my blog is called Sex and the Single Mom, and when Redbook asked me to do it, it was supposed to be very specifically about my dating life. And and they were getting a lot of mail online and off saying, you know, that I must not be a good mother. It was because it sounded like I was going out every night. And so the editor-in-chief actually wrote in one of the comments saying, I asked her to write about this. That doesn't mean she's not having a life outside of this arena. Yeah. But I think people get very confused by that.
Yeah, that would happen to me a lot. They would all, like, send in this advice, like, it will come when you're not looking, and, like, you have to stop obsessing so much, and you have to stop self-analyzing. It's like, dude, I'm paid to freaking obsess about guys. Like, in real life, I don't give a shit about this guy, but I have to write 4 paragraphs about what I'm thinking, and then I'm, like, going to go back to my life with my friends and my family. Like, I don't really care, but, I mean, you know, that was the job.
Right.
And it sucks because you don't, I mean, I'm pretty social, and there's no way I could go on the amount of dates that, like, the readers were, like, fiending for, and Glamour was... We're not like robots,
yeah.
But I pushed. I definitely pushed myself. Those were some wild 6 months.
Do you want to say something?
I was going to say, I found that Mickey asked what resonates with our readers. My readers, they respond much better to the emotional posts, to the raw emotional posts. And every now and again, I get a comment that says, you know, this is supposed to be an edgy sex blog, and why aren't you writing about sex? And sometimes I do. But I don't find that there's a lot of depth in that content. And when I write about the emotional things, like if I'm feeling hurt or what my response is to my experience with this guy or that guy or what it feels like to start dating again after my father died, that's what they respond to.
Yeah.
People respond to
that.
True. When my dad died and I was like, fuck it, I'm not writing about sex, I'm writing my father dying, I got more comments than I'd ever gotten of people talking about the emotion and how it felt. And then that seems to be what they connect to the most. The sex posts, people make raunchy comments or they think it's funny, but the emotion they hook into.
I've experienced the exact same thing.
Me too. Yeah. Well, I actually thought when I first started that, like, I was living in L.A. and I had these semi-fabulous wannabe friends, and I would talk about these parties and, like, these clothes and my F-list friends or whatever. And I thought that I sounded cool and, like, you know, Sex in the City-ish. And the readers didn't like me. They were turned off by that. And it was just my sort of lingo and my style. I wasn't really, like, that superficial person. But as soon as I dropped all that, never mentioned, like, Paris Hilton again, they want to see the human side and the vulnerable side and the sad side and all that.
I mean, I think what you can do with a blog that you can't necessarily do with a magazine article, or you can't do as frequently, is show people part of your personality. And I feel like the personal blogs that I read, they're not necessarily always people that I want to hang out with or would want to be friends with, but I find their personal life and their diary, like, interesting because they go beyond the surface. And I think it's sort of a tension because those emotional things that you share, it's tough sometimes to share them and then realize, oh yeah, like, who knows who might be reading that. But then I do think those are the things that people like to read.
That being said, someone wrote in, they left a comment once and said, this is a blog written by a girl, and there's nothing I like reading more than girls and anal sex. Why do you never write about anal sex? So the next day, I made a post that was literally 3 sentences long, and it said, people are complaining because we don't talk about anal sex. Green light, anal sex. That's all it said. I mean, 40 comments that were 500 words long, explaining how people do it with their wives, how you convince a woman to do it. If you're a woman, how do you get them to get into it? And if you're someone who's like, oh, I'm not going to do that because that means I'm gay, and then it went on, like, well, men have nipples, so if you kiss a woman's nipples, are you gay? And people were, like, dying to talk about their experiences with anal sex. It's amazing what people will say when it's anonymous.
Yeah.
And there's one girl, actually, because guys were like, How do you convince a girl to do it? And a girl was like, how do you convince a guy who doesn't want to do it? And she logged on and she goes, I find that why don't you F me in the A really works. And so now whenever she leaves a comment on the blog, she signs in as F in the A. So people love that. So it's the emotional part, but there's also that kind of fetish part and that thing that we hate talking about sex in this society for some reason. It's so, like, glamorized on TV. But if you talk about it in a public forum, people freak out. And so if you give people the space to talk about that in a safe, anonymous way, they'd go nuts.
We have different readers.
Totally.
Well, mine are happy to be having any kind of sex.
Yeah.
So I wanted to get a little bit into the negative comments. We've talked about this in the email, the notion of like blogger skin, and obviously these blogs, most of them are higher profile because they're for publications. Rachel was a columnist for the Village Voice for years, very well-loved column that sadly is no longer. And so I printed out a couple negative comments so you guys have an idea of the kind of stuff that people post. Does this blog always suck? This blogger needs a therapist. Enjoy it, blogtards. I'm going to go read the escort ads. I read this blog for the same reasons that I watch Studio 60 and Meredith Vieira and crappy reality television. I love emotional train wrecks. You are totally pathetic. Just do him and use him for what you want and get over your prude-ass self. I hope I never turn into you. I would kill myself. So, I mean, how do you do... I mean, I know that the majority of the comments on your... You guys, each of you, I'm sure, knows which blog that was from.
I, like, feel like crying just hearing
them. I'm so sorry.
I think you guys all have such, like, thicker blogger skin than me because I literally call my editor and quit every time I get a comment like that. I hate it. I don't get it. I would never in a million years post a nasty comment on a blog. I just... emotionally, I don't understand what goes through, why it makes them feel so good. I get a few nasty bitches who come on all, like, inevitably, it'll be, like, 60 posts, comments, and I'll be like, oh, I'm doing good today, they like me, and then that one will come on and, like, trigger, and then they'll all come to life. And I got, like, a death threat last week. Someone, it turned into a death threat, actually. Well, not... I call it a death threat because I'm being a drama queen, but it was like somebody saying that if anybody ever sees me on the street, to slash my throat or something, like scary. And I quit that day too, but they got me back. But I that's to me the very worst part about blogging. I hate the hate mail.
But what I found interesting with my hate mail was that they start arguing with each other a lot, and it's not about me. I mean, the times that it's happened is when I threw out issues out there. This was about whether at a certain point in your life you friends with benefits is actual possibility or not. But I mean, one time I wrote a blog that I thought was going to be totally innocuous about this dilemma of it was a rainy night, my babies didn't, I wanted to go to a cocktail party, yes, to meet men, and I left my daughter alone for an hour, and I just wrote how I didn't enjoy the party because I was worried about being home. When I got home, my daughter said, why didn't you stay at the party? And you know, 57 people wrote in and started fighting with each other about what it means to be a good parent or have a sex life as a parent. And they started fighting, really having vicious fights with each other. And that's what I didn't understand about this whole world before and found interesting. I just didn't take that personally. I just found it interesting because they were insulting each other more than they were insulting me.
I took comments down from my blog over a year ago, and I'm thinking about putting them back up, but I took them down because it wasn't constructive and it wasn't... It was like someone wrote a like two stanza poem about how... I don't know. It was just mean, and I just... I don't know. It was like how I'm not a feminist because, like, I have naked pictures of myself online. Like, I don't know. But it was in such a... Like, they took enough time to, like, write that, and I think the ability to make anonymous comments brings out people's whatever that is. But I also think that when you write something, even though you're just sharing your own experience, people take it really personally, and they think that you're saying that they should do this, whatever you're doing. So if I say I like X, like, they think that I'm saying you should like it too, and if you don't, there's something wrong with you. I think people really personalize whatever you write about, and then they get affronted, and then they want to, like, defend themselves.
And I find, for some reason, being anonymous and not having any accountability is like a green card to say the meanest thing that you can think of. And I would love to tell you that it doesn't bother me, but it does. I've been doing this for a year and a half, and it still bothers me. One girl said I had profound emotional issues, and another said, you know, I was a dirty, actually twice, a dirty disease, filthy something, slut, whatever. And you think, you know, if your name was on that, would you say that? Like, do you kiss your mother with that mouth? And people get really personal because when they decide they don't like the blog or they don't like what I'm writing, it's not, I don't like what you're writing, it's, I don't like you. And the whole anonymous thing, I mean, I can appreciate it, but it erases accountability, and I think it also erases integrity because suddenly you can say mean things and you don't have to have any depth and you don't have to have any content. And it's a platform for your own voice because, again, like, it's the echo effect. Like, they start talking to each other and insulting each other, and
But didn't you also find, I mean, and I agree, but the upside of the anonymity is that a lot of women are willing to share their stories that way and would start sharing really personal stuff. Yeah. And that was a good thing, I thought. Mm-hmm. And they might not have felt able to do that if they weren't anonymous. Mm-hmm. So there's an up and down to it.
I wanted to talk about anonymity in another sense. Like, were any of you tempted to do your blog anonymously? Do you wish you could have gone back and done it that way? As we were talking about before, and if people saw in the New Yorker, there was a story about a blogger in London who wrote a sex blog and got a book deal, and then the London Times or some tabloid there, you know, found out who she was and ambushed her and took a picture of her on her front porch and then basically, like, blackmailed her into cooperating with the story. You had a couple of things to say about that?
Yeah, I totally would have loved to have done it anonymously. They asked me to do it they wanted me to do it. But I think we all, or a number of us, have had this experience where part of the great thing about doing a blog like this is you actually do feel like there's a service to other people, that they're not alone, that they're sharing, that there are similar problems and your lives aren't perfect. But the deeper you get into it and the more you see the ramifications, you start dialing back, at least I did. And so you whitewash your own life a little bit because it's not anonymous, and then you're not really doing a service to people anymore. So you get kind of caught in this crossfire of that.
I wish it had been. I think Glamour and Red Book and some of the other magazines, I think Elle just launched one. It's like a PR thing. Like, they wanted a face. I couldn't be anonymous. It wasn't an option. Like, they wanted someone that they could book on TV shows. They wanted somebody who would do radio interviews. And, you know, it really helped launch Glamour.com and probably your website, too. And so it wasn't an option.
I went back and forth with my editors in the beginning because I was the first person they'd ever hired to do this, and talked for a long time with my dad about it, and we decided that it was just better that we don't use my real name. And the paper told me it wasn't an option because they wanted accountability, and they said journalistic integrity, at which point I reminded them it's a sex blog. But I do now, and in the end, it wasn't a choice, but my ego got the best of me. I was like, ooh, my name's going to be on it. People are going to Google me and be like, ooh, there's that, like, fat, nerdy girl from junior high. Now she's a sex columnist. And that was my ego talking. And now I lost a job over it. I had a job offer in the fall, and they came to me, a girls' empowerment group. And they said, you know, we work in the high schools, and you're going to be a casualty. You need to, like, if principals find out you're doing this, it's not good. And what are you going to do? And it just wasn't enough for me to quit. And I got another job offer in December, and they said, this is a deal breaker. You either clean it up or you don't get the job. So for those reasons, yeah, I wish it was under another name now, because it doesn't pay enough to keep a roof over my head or provide health insurance. So I wish that it had been under another name.
I have the opposite experience a little bit, and then I have a book coming out in October, and my publisher, and I was telling them over lunch last week that I'm giving up the blog because it's destroying my life, and they said, well, don't give it up until October, you know, please, because we can link it. And so at a certain point, you kind of feel like you have to choose between the good side, that it does do some good things for your career, and the fact that it might be doing not such good things for your personal life, which I frankly think should come first. But, you know, I think it also can have a positive effect.
I have thought about starting, like, another anonymous blog over the years, because a lot of my friends are anonymous sex bloggers, and I can't, or I choose not to go into as much detail as they do, because I think it's just totally different when it's your real name. I mean, on the other hand, I work at a porn magazine, I edit erotica books, like, I do everything else pretty much under my name, which I sort of leaped into whenever I started writing about sex, like, 5 years ago, and I think once your name is already out there, I mean, there's not that much point in not doing stuff under your name. But I do think that it makes you reconsider certain things that you might want to write about, but just you don't necessarily want that out there forever. And I've definitely, like, posted things and then taken them down the next day or a few hours later. And I think, like, it still was useful, because for me, like, the just writing it down and feeling, like, those feelings, like, were, like, outside of me, that was helpful. And then after that, I felt like, oh, okay, it's okay, I can delete it now.
Rachel, when you were writing your paper column, did you find that the feedback, I mean, to respond to something that was written in, you know, a newspaper, it's not as instantaneous as posting a comment on a blog. Did you find that you got different kinds of feedback than what people have been saying here?
I think people send emails in a different way than they'll comment on a blog. Like, I think I developed email friendships with people who would respond to my voice column, and I think the benefit of putting your name on your writing and putting it out there is that people feel like they can trust you with their stories and sharing things, and I think you don't really get that anonymously, because, you know, some of these anonymous blogs or anonymous sex columns, you know, that could be anyone writing it. Like, it could be fiction. Like, you don't know. And so, I mean, and while at the same time, I guess when people are using their real name, it could be fictionalized, but I think less so. I think with blog comments, it's so public. Like, a lot of people are, there's the anonymous people, but then there are the other people who are, like, doing it so that you'll read that and then click through to their blog. So I think it's a sort of, it's different than the kinds of people who email you and then really have, like, personal things to say. But I also think people would email me or still email me with, like, problems, and I'm like, I'm not an advice
columnist.
That
was my next question. Like, how often do you find yourselves becoming advice columnists?
They just want to give me advice on what I'm doing wrong. They don't want my advice.
Yeah. I think Glamour made me, do MySpace, and I just thought I was too old for it, and I didn't want to, but the minute I started MySpace, the readers started emailing me all the time about some, like, really intense private shit that, like, they couldn't turn to for anybody else, and that's when I stopped, that's when I started liking the blog a lot more, and that's when I sort of started seeing the greater good of it, that it wasn't just about who I was dating that night, but that it really was getting girls to open up and think. And I would write, you know, always say to them, I'm not an expert, but I could sort of give them this, like, big sisterly advice, because they knew that they know what I'm going through and that I've been through a lot. And that, so yeah. And I think now we're sort of transcending the blog into something that's more of like a group therapy kind of thing, where women can use it as a tool to get advice from, like, the hundreds of people who go onto it every day. And I think I'm going to start writing in anonymously on top of my blog, because there's such good fucked up stuff that happens to you when you're single, but I just can't write about it with under my name and picture, but I still want to talk to my readers about it. So that's my only sort of, yeah, that's my solution, I think.
How many of you have ever sent a secret message to a guy, like, sort of posted something that you hoped the guy you were dating was going to read and react a certain way? Only Emily? I'm shocked.
Well, you can do subtle. You know that whoever is in your life is reading it, and you can subtly tip things one way or the other. I think you can.
And I kind of want to get back to the whole telling the guy that you're going to be writing about the relationship. Like, how many guys say that's a deal breaker? How often does it become something that you're discussing at every single date? I read your blog last night. Why did you? I mean, how much of it does it just take over the relationship, or is there ways to keep it?
Takes over the only guy I ever dated in, like, this 6 months that I was doing it, the only guy who liked it was on drugs, like, literally on drugs, like a raging cokehead.
Yeah.
Like, he was the only guy that embraced it and loved it and wanted me to do Q&As with him and whatever. Yeah. Full-blown cokehead.
Wait, didn't you also date a guy who didn't have a computer?
Oh, I found, like, the one, like, someone who didn't speak English, didn't know what email was, and was basically homeless, and we had a really fun time for, like, 3 weeks because he didn't know I was writing about him. That's it. So for the rest of the guys, crashed and burned because of the blog. I couldn't find a way to balance it. And yes, it's all they would ask about is, are you going to write about this? Oh my God, what did you mean with that? And wait, you really miss your ex-boyfriend that much? And oh my God, you listened to that song at the gym. You must really love me. And oh, it was just like, shut up. Don't read it. It's crap. Don't read it.
But then I've had a guy say, like, I've just made a decision. I'm not going to read the blog anymore. And then you think, really? Can you do that? You know, I don't know.
I always tell them I'm not going to blog about them while I'm dating them. And it's really painful, because you'll get some good stuff and you're like, oh, I really want to write about this. But that's sort of the deal that I put forth to them. I won't write about you while we're dating. But then again, if you dump me, you're fair game. And what? Yeah, he's fair game then too. Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of gives you incentive to break up with people.
Yeah,
so
it really
does. To write about.
Yeah. And then one guy said he wasn't going to read the blog, and he really didn't. But his brother was reading it and updating him on everything. And it's there. I mean, they're reading and they know, and it's sort of like they have a free backstage pass to your head, into your head, yeah. And they... It's there.
It's kind of hard to play cool and hard to get.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
I mean, like this guy.
And when you're dating, there's like some notion of having like a poker face and playing it cool. And it's true, playing the game. And as it doesn't matter how old you are or how mature you are, you have to play the game a little. And when a guy is reading your deepest thoughts, like that you called your mother and said like, oh my God, I met the guy I'm going to marry, or whatever it is, like you can't let guys know that stuff. Like you guys know that, so...
That, I think that's one of the hardest, just strategy-wise, it's hard.
Yeah.
And I think it's not just writing about dating, because I think you might agree not to write about that person, but if you're writing about the rest of your life and personal things, I mean, they're definitely going to read things, at least on my blog, that I wouldn't discuss with them, because maybe I just met them. I mean, that I feel fine about blogging about. I mean, I don't know why that is, I don't know, but like that I might write on the blog that wouldn't just come up in conversation. And so I think it's a little bit of like a imbalance, because you don't find those things out necessarily about them until you get to know them. And you know, I had a situation recently where on our first date, basically this person asked me not to write about them, and I agreed. And then it, like a couple weeks later, he was like, I can't deal with, like he hadn't read it all that time because he couldn't go on at work or something. Anyway, and then he did, and then it was like, I can't deal with this. And I felt like that was kind of unfair because I thought we'd already kind of dealt with it. And I was kind of treading lightly. Like, I didn't even say I went out on a... Like, I didn't even say anything innocuous about it. So I think it's tough. But, Emily, you brought this up before, the idea that, like, would we want to be written about?
Well, that's, you know, once I had found my fabulous four panelists, obviously the question was, why are there no guy dating bloggers? You know, I really... There's maybe three... I mean, I really scoured. I, you know, talked to the people at Technorati. I went through, you know... zillions of different kinds of Google searches and blog searches. And I mean, there's a few that are just basically recounting sexual exploits, which are more or less not true, I would guess, but a lot of furloughed men from the military. But you know, why do you think, I mean, obviously we're going to be getting into some stereotypes and essentialism, but why do you think it is that the majority of dating bloggers are women, straight women?
Men are pre-verbal.
I think, yeah, everybody knows that. They're so right.
They're smart about dating.
I have a whole theory about this, based in a little bit of someone else's scientific sociological research or something. And I read somewhere, and I don't know where it was. It was on the internet, so I'm sure that makes it true, that women are talkers, and I know that's a big surprise to you, is that women are talkers, and that one of the sexual cues for women to get aroused is actually like the sound of their own voice, and emotionally, and that's true, and talking and emotionally connecting and talking with you is a big turn on for them, and there's a chemical reaction in your brain that responds to that, whereas with men it's touch oriented and physical oriented, and so I think you might be seeing kind of the
foreplay.
Yeah, and this is like the internet manifestation of women just being talky creatures.
I think that there's also a difference in the nature of male and female friendships, that most of these blogs are very much like the emails we used to send our girlfriends, like a million times a day. What did he mean by this? What did he mean by that? And in my experience, men don't send those emails to their friends analyzing every day. So this is more of a natural outgrowth of how women communicate with each other, I think, than how men do.
I just think a lot of my readers are just bored and home, and they want to live vicariously through someone who's like having sex and stuff.
Right. Do you guys have, how many of you have a sense really of who reads your blog? Yeah?
To a degree. So what they tell me is that my demographics are actually between the ages of 25 and 40, and like they're married people, which is very strange. It was not who I thought was reading. But I have a lot of dedicated male readers, which I thought was really weird because I'm definitely a very girly writer. It wasn't what I expected.
Yeah, when you get MySpace and they start sending you pictures, it's like, oh my God, you're that one. And like, oh yeah, no wonder you're so bitter and whatever. You put it all together. Well, that was just for like this one total bitch. But But yeah, but they're all, I had no idea how many were teenagers, and I'm like, oh my God, I put my love life in the hand of like 16-year-olds this whole time. But then, you know, it's all across the, for Glamour at least, it's probably like the demographic of the magazine's kind of all across the board, which is great because it's diverse.
Yeah. I think I actually did get a lot of single mothers, so there's I don't think there's a lot out there where motherhood and sex intersect.
I don't know exactly, and I sort of try not to think about it, because the minute I start thinking about it, even if it's like a friend, I'm like, well, what if I say that? I mean, it's just, I think the more I think about who might be reading, the more inhibited I get about it. So I don't know.
I wanted to talk a little bit about your editors, like how, I mean, Rachel, you're writing yours flying solo these days, but, you know, how heavily are you edited? What about lawyers? Jessica Cutler, big sex blogger in Washington, is being sued by a former lover for, I don't think she even revealed his name, but he felt that people would know, and he got fired for reading her blog while at work.
Huh.
But, you know, how many of you, how much does that factor into what you're thinking about? You know, how much are the magazines or the newspaper, like, vetting what you say?
They don't vet it at all. It goes up 2 seconds after I send it to them, typos and all.
And yeah. Did you have to sign any kind of, like, liability contract?
Or? I did not, yeah.
No. I had, like, a meeting with the legal, like, I learned the rules and stuff, and, yeah, I know I'm like, petrified of getting sued, so I never crossed the line.
Or tried. You never asked me to talk to a lawyer.
What was the line that they told you?
I mean, it's just about, I kind of forgot. No, it's like just about not revealing anything that could attach them to a work or career. Know where you were. Like if we met at like a rooftop party, don't even say it was a rooftop party, just a party. Just really be as vague as possible in terms of linking them, this guy, back to the story. But I'm not edited at all, but I think probably, again, too hard about pleasing my editors because, you know, they want it to be juicy and they want it to be meaty and they want me to talk about sex and stuff. They don't, they're awesome. They don't pressure me, but I want to, like, impress them. So, again, it's that thing, like, do I just sacrifice my personal life and, like, upset my parents? But, yeah, Glamour will think I'm, like, edgy and uninhibited. So, I don't know. I haven't figured it out yet.
I have an editor, and he's like my surrogate boyfriend, kind of. I email him everything that I write, and he doesn't vet anything. He just kind of corrects the typos, although he's slacked on that lately, and it's showing. People are like, oh, you have an eighth grade education. And he also makes sure that I'm not saying anything that could get us sued. I have no legal contract with them, and I'm actually looking to get insurance that says that I can't be sued, or if I am sued, I'm covered. Or that they have to sue the paper and not me. And that actually happened because there were two guys. Apparently a little bit of detail was a little too much, because a friend of mine called me and he said, what did you write about me on the blog? And I'm like, why? This is a guy I used to date. And I'm like, why? And he's like, my girlfriend just read it and called me. And she recognized me because I said he had two cats. Mm-hmm. And he lived in Virginia.
How many guys have two cats?
Yeah, and she totally busted him. And I was like, first of all, why didn't you tell me you had a girlfriend? Because I wouldn't be sleeping with you and writing about it if I knew you had a girlfriend. And he got busted. She dumped him. And then, actually, she didn't dump him for like a couple months, which I thought was kind of lame. And then there was another guy more recently who his girlfriend was reading about it and totally nailed him, because he was texting me these dirty text messages, and I was like, I was in a bar and I'm like, you guys, look at this. And he was doing it when she was sitting next to him. Mm-hmm. And she was like following the blog, and she knows that he and I are friends, and apparently she had said, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm texting Mila. And I wrote the next day about this guy who was texting me all this dirty stuff, and I wrote the texts in hand, and she totally busted him. And that's when I realized I probably needed like some kind of insurance so that I don't get sued, although that doesn't cover what happens if someone claws my eyes out.
But in that case, I feel like you're not, I mean, I feel like you're saying something that actually happened. I mean, I think what happens with Jessica Cutler's case is going to affect like sort of what happens in the dating and sex blogosphere. And, you know, you can talk to me after about how much I think the guy who's suing her is crazy. He's suing her for $20 million.
It's $10 million for her, for $10 million for punitive and $10 million for compensatory or something like that.
I don't know. He's also a lawyer, so I feel like the chances of. I mean, I feel like it would take a lot for someone to sue someone over something like that, because then they're going to have to reveal them, you know, who they are. You know, like, I just think, I mean, I'm not saying, like, go ahead and, you know, post people's names, but I feel like that's a whole other level of, I don't know.
Although I will say, this is totally off topic, I was on the People's Court because a woman sued my zine for showing a picture of her son, and then Judge Wapner threw it out because he said, here you are with your son on national television. So,
huh. Wow.
There you go.
Wow.
True story. So I wanted to talk a little bit about, I mean, I know you guys, Alyssa, don't talk a lot about sex, but there is this, you know, you are professional writers, all of you, and if there is a worry about being ghettoized, about becoming just a dating writer or just a sex writer, and, you know, obviously, Rachel, you work a lot in the sex field, but so that probably happens to you more than the other people, but maybe you want to talk a little bit about how it affects you professionally if you're working in that area.
I think if you write about sex and you also want to write about other topics, you have to really be aggressive in going after those other topics. I mean, I think the good part about writing about it is that you can write for men's magazines, women's magazines, general, like, there's sex in everything, and, you know, whether it's technology or just so many different areas that it crosses. So I think, you know, in that sense, it's good. But I do think that, like, I write about books, I do book reviews, and I write for Media Bistro and stuff, and I try to really just pursue all the other topics that I'm interested in so that that doesn't happen. And I think it's really hard to not sort of internalize some of the negativity around sex writing, around the people who think, oh, if you write about sex, you know, you're a big whore, or, like, that's a really easy topic. I mean, I think there's so many stereotypes around it, and not internalizing those is kind of hard. But at the same time, you know, I think if you do want to write about sex, there is a market for that. But if you also want to write about other things, you know, like, sometimes I'll phrase my bios differently than I, you know, I won't necessarily say, like, oh, I did a book about spanking, when it's, like, on Media Bistro, it just says, like, is a writer, editor, and blogger. And, like, if they want to find out more, they can click through. So, yeah. Yeah.
I haven't found it a problem because I've done so many things. This is a small part of what I'm doing, and it's a recent part. So, and I'm older. I don't know. It hasn't been an issue for me.
Right.
I tried, like, I was really conscious of that, and I just tried to keep doing other freelance things. There was a point where I was going to these parties in L.A., and they'd be like, this is my friend Alyssa, she's the dating blogger. Or they'd be like, oh, hey, you're the dating blogger. And I was like, I'm so... like, I just didn't want to grow old as, like, the dating vlogger. So I'm trying to be like, oh, there's Alyssa who used to work at Us Weekly, or Alyssa who, you know. But yeah, you have, because people will only remember that you once wrote about how you lost your virginity on the internet or whatever.
Right. Didn't you say that on Google? Sorry, the only thing that comes up is...
it's the first thing that comes up.
Yeah, all of you.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Definitely.
And I was on the cover of National Enquirer, like, making out with Nick Lachey, and my stupid blog is still the first thing that comes up.
Not after I Google it.
We weren't really making out. It was like a bad angle. We weren't making out, but it was like, it looked it like it, and somebody sold the picture to Inquirer.
What Alyssa just said, like, that people will remember that. I mean, I think that's true, and I think that if you go into writing about sex in a blog or wherever, I mean, you have to sort of accept that for a lot of people, like, they're not going to go any farther, like, whether it's potential dates or whoever, like, they might hear that and just, like, walk away, or they might hear that and be like, okay, I don't, you know, I'm not interested in having you write about this other topic or whatever. I mean, I think you have to sort of make your peace with that and believe that you're doing it for whatever reason you're doing it for, that you have something else driving you. Because otherwise, I mean, I think there are a lot of people who look down on people who write about dating or sex as something really frivolous. You know, I mean, I wouldn't agree that it's frivolous, because I think the reason so many people respond and people read these type of blogs is because they're going through similar situations or have gone through similar situations. Like, even if they're happily married and that was, like, a long time ago for them, they can, you know, it's exciting to read about people dating or whatever.
Well, I think there's also, I mean, not to get too much in the industry talk, I mean, there's also just a general belittling of women's magazines and women's issues and things like that within the publishing industry, which I think affects all of what you guys were saying.
Yeah.
I think we're going to turn it over to audience questions now, unless you guys have other stuff you want to talk about. Are there any questions? There's a microphone in the middle. Maybe you can fight over his broken. Hi.
So have any of you ever been written about by some man? Mm-hmm. You know, was there any guy who, like, decided, hey, I'm going to take up blogging, you know?
One guy did a little, like, thing on my blog, like, as a commenter. He was like, I'm Boston Boy. I'm the one who she went out with. And he gave his, like, rendition of the date, which was so wrong. And he's like, and we were smooching. Like, it was a peck on the cheek. And I was so pissed off and, like, I was irate, and I told him, like, to stay out of my life. But then I'm like, but that's what I, essentially, that's, like, what I do to every guy. But I don't, because he was really not, he was just, like, not cool about it. But, yeah, I did not like that feeling at all.
Yeah. I had someone I had a situation where someone was writing about some things that we did, and it was fine. Like, it was all complimentary, and it was in the style of her blog. Like, it wasn't anything bad or out there, but I have to say it was weird. Even though I had no, like, it wasn't inaccurate, but it was strange because I don't even think that there was a link to me, but you would know. I mean, because I think I think we both are in, like, some anthology, and she had written about me a little bit. It was strange. Like, it's a weird feeling because, I don't know, even if you were there, it is strange.
And I think, Alyssa, you also had the experience, besides the National Enquirer, of Gawker picking up. Gawker is this very bitchy media column blog, picking up a lot of your things that happened in your blog.
Yeah.
And what
Gawker
is that like?
They ate it alive. I mean, and it wasn't personal. It was just the notion of, like, Glamour magazine paying somebody to date, and Redbook paying a single mom to date. We were, I think, our first Gawker thing was together, and I really didn't like. And that's, I think, the difference maybe between me and some other bloggers is, like, I never did this to be famous. I didn't do it because I'm not promoting anything. I don't want a book. I don't want a reality TV show. So I think to a lot of bloggers, it's, like, the only thing worse than being on Gawker is not being on Gawker. For me, like, there's nothing worse than being on Gawker because it's very tongue-in-cheek, and we can all read it about each other and kind of be like, that's funny, like, haha, that's so witty, it's so well written. But, like, to our friends who aren't in the industry or family members, it, like, breaks their heart to read those, like, comments about you and stuff that they don't get how, like, this media, like, they're not savvy like that. So it's more like it's embarrassing knowing that one day, like, my future husband's mother is going to read Gawker calling me, like, the dating whore of Condé Nast or whatever.
Okay, yeah, next.
This question is for Melanie. When you said you don't post while you don't publish while you're in the relationship, do you take notes then? Like, privately post somewhere else, like you're blogging over here, and then you can cut and paste it over there?
Busted. I do, but I don't post it anywhere. I blog about it, and then I'll write a post, and then I just save it on my hard drive. And what I found, this is, like, sort of in my defense, but I mean, let's be frank, I'm writing and I'm like, when this is over, I'm gonna dump. Post it, but I write every day, and it's become, like, my way of processing things and kind of my way of exhaling. So it's sort of just sort of the way I work through it. So yeah, I write about intense experiences, and then, you know, should the relationship end, it is quite handy to have them there.
This is back a little bit to what you guys were saying about commenters on your blogs getting really personal. I mean, I always think the classic example of this is Rebecca Traister on Salon. Like, there are just a lot of young women writers who attract a level of vitriol that I don't see other places. And I wonder if you guys have a sense, like, why do you think it is that women's writing tends to get such personal responses? Like, call you a bitter spinster or whatever.
I think with mine, it might be a slightly different issue, but I think mothers are incredibly judgmental, whether it's working versus non-working or whatever, and it does bring up a level of anger and defensiveness and judgment that I haven't seen in any other arena to that degree, and certainly I was witness to that.
Dude, girls are bitches. That's it. Like, women are really catty. That's it. And that's the way that we fight with each other. We're not physical. We're very... we're mental, and we're rude, and we're mean.
So, well, I think it's very easy and very historically prominent, especially in our country, to just dismiss the things that women say. And, you know, that Melanie's working things out. That's her process. But, you know, women's talk, it's degrade, you know, they call it gossip, they call it this, you know, whereas, you know, in many instances, people are actually sharing important information that helps people, you know, figure out their own relationships and things like that. But I think, you know, that's probably a very small minority of people who really realize that that's the situation. Good question.
This is a comment about, and a question about Melissa Boyer's comment about guys not blogging about dating. I've actually wrote about dating on The Well and this other private list called the No End List, and the experience I've had is, like, no matter how I write about dating, I can't avoid, you know, the sort of controversies that you guys run into. So I guess my question is, the biggest charge I get is, wow, you're sexist. You wrote about dating. How do you lessen those sorts of charges, whether being called sexist or a slut or whatever?
I don't think you can, because when you put something out there, people are going to read it and interpret it the way that they will, and every comment comes from some sort of bias, personal bias, and that's why you have to remain as equally removed from your praise as you do from your negative comments, because everything's going to come from a bias. I mean, you can put out something incredibly innocuous and someone's going to go, you're a total sexist, you're a slut. It's just coming from, you know, coming from their own bias.
Hi, my name's Karen Kreps. For the past 5 years, I've been writing for a local Austin magazine, a column called Intimacies, which is all about love, sex, romance, and relationships. And I'm going in the opposite direction. I'm about to self-publish a collection of my 5 years of columns, and now I'm being told I need a blog in order to promote the book. And I'm wondering what the content of the blog would be. I've been married for 15 years after a couple of decades of being single, so I write about both how to have a successful long-term relationship and how to deal with being single. And I generally don't write about my own experiences. I get other people's stories. I'd like to ask, do you think that a blog could get other people to tell me their stories so that I could repurpose them, use them in a column? And what kind of monetization is available for this kind of thing? Any ideas?
I don't know about the money part, but I think people do want to share their stories. Like, when I was writing my sex column, I was always like, can you talk to me about, like, all different things? And people always wanted to talk about them. I think if you give them a topic, like the anal sex thing, people do want to share. Because I think even though there is so much media and blogs and all these columns and things, I think there's still people have questions about sex and they don't know, you know, who to ask. And given an anonymous, like, freedom to talk about it and to share stories and maybe get advice or just feel like they're not alone. Mm-hmm. I think there's definitely, like, sort of an infinite number of things that could be written about. And I think people are eager for that, especially when it's not just, like, I think, you know, when you're writing a blog about your personal life, it's about your personal life. But then whether you have comments or not, people do want to share. Like, I think it's a two-way street. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. I mean, I'm turning my blog, I'm trying to eventually turn into that too. I want the spotlight sort of off of my life for a while. And I think there's going to be more than enough fodder and conversation to go around if I start sort of taking some of their comments and saying, like, so-and-so, ho-ho-ho, Merry Christmas, or whatever comment name it is, said this. What do you guys think about it? And I've done that a few times, and I've gotten more comments than ever. So, and your job would just be to be like the moderator. You know, you give your 2 cents every now and then, because it sounds like you have had all sorts of experiences. Right. It sounds like a good idea.
Thank you very much. An tack-on question is, my column's kind of PG in tone. Are you able to control the level of salaciousness in your comments and that kind of thing, and how do you do it?
No.
Red Book controls it. So if they really feel something can come down, they'll take it down.
I mean, that's a technical question about how you set up your blog. If you set it up so that every comment has to pass through you before it goes live, then you can control. But it just depends on the software you use.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I guess you talked about this in your sexual or dating relationships, but at what point have you had experiences, say, I guess for lack of a better term, coming out to people in other relationships? I mean,
Have you had situations where, you know, you're going to wait until your kid's fourth grade teacher knows you have this sex blog, and or do you, like, I mean,
that's
in some
she got kicked out of school.
Right. In some ways, I think that would probably be obnoxious to, you know, go into your dentist's office and say, like, hey, I have a sex blog. You might have read it, you know. But at what point, like, do you tell people in non-sexual relationships? I mean, your parents, obviously, that's a big one, but other kinds of, in what relationships non-sexually do you?
Well, because I do have a 13-year-old child who thinks I'm doing something totally different in Austin today, I have my friends lie for me if I have to do something, like if I have to do television or radio, and I've constructed very elaborate lies that my friends try and keep up for me while if I have to leave at 5 in the morning to do something. And it gets very complicated to have that many realities out there.
I used to keep it from everyone just because it took me a while to really, like, warm up to it, and I wasn't really comfortable in blogging. I didn't like it in the beginning, and I found that as I grew into it, I would just, the more I embraced it, like anything else, the more secure I was with it, and the more proud I was of it, it worked out better. So I started telling everybody, like, and I started really feeling great about my work. I was working really hard and writing my guts out every night. So like anything else, I think you have to own it and you have to feel good about it, and then you can start. I mean, it's different with you because there's...
Right. Like, what age is the right age to tell your kid you write a sex blog, I guess?
30.
You
know?
I just wanted to ask, I know you guys are waiting. Do you guys want to say briefly how much time it takes you to write your blog? I mean, I think a lot of people think, wow, it's just an hour a day, and she's getting paid. In most of your cases, she's getting paid to do it. Must be a sweet gig. Like, how much time does it really take you?
It's a full-time job. I get paid in beer money. But I spend an hour to 2 hours per post and then managing the comments, and it's time-consuming.
Yeah. Mine is 2 to 3 times a week, so it's a little bit less. In the beginning, I was spending so much time on it. It's tied to a column I have in the pages of the magazine as well, so I have to do that as well. And I actually, because I have other big writing projects, I found I was spending too much time on the blog and then too much time checking it and everything. And so I actually had to wean myself a little bit from it and realize also that I'm a novelist, and I would rewrite the blog in the beginning so many times the way I would a novel, and then realize that it's a different form, and if it goes up with typos, then it goes up with typos, but there's something about that immediacy, so I've tried to dial it back on purpose.
Yeah, you gotta walk away from the blog at a certain point each day, because, like, I would just keep hitting refresh, like, waiting for that one nasty commenter to come, and it just makes me insane. These aren't real people. I mean, I love most of my readers, but they aren't real people in my real life, and you get obsessed with what people think about what you wrote about. So it that plus everything else, the blog, like trying to get people to. I didn't really realize like the self promotion that was involved when you do a blog. Like, you have to link to other blogs, you have to get people to talk about you, or nobody's gonna know, and that's a big deal, and that takes that's a certain type of personality to be able to, like, call people and be like, hey, I'm really interesting. My, like, dating life's fabulous. Like, you have to read my blog. That was weird for me.
I think, yeah, the maintenance of the blog, like, the actual posts, I write most things probably too quickly, so I just usually just write them and they go. But I think the maintenance, the, like, checking your statistics and Technorati and Ice Rocket and all of that, I mean, if you're a little obsessive like me, like, you're checking it all the time, I think that takes a while, but you could do it. You don't have to do it that way.
Okay. Thank you for waiting patiently.
Oh, it's okay. So a couple things have been said about gender, which are interesting, and I wanted to ask a question, which is, so you asked why men aren't blogging, and then someone said, well, I have tried, and then the question about sexism came up, and the fact is that it occurs to me that, I mean, one thing is Redbook and Glamour aren't going to pay men to blog. They're going to pay attractive women, because, as you all said, it's sort of, for them, it's this PR thing. And what I'm wondering is, so in some sense, when you're talking about sex, women, particularly in the United States, are able to talk much more openly mm-hmm. about sex in some ways, which is not to say that, which is not to discount sort of their marginalization. But I'm wondering if any of you have comments around, are you kind of aware of that privilege, that what you're doing is in fact something a straight man probably couldn't do, certainly in mainstream media, in a Condé Nast publication or something like that. Are you guys aware of that, or does that not really, all the other ways you get screwed in media kind of balance it out? Or?
No. I mean, you guys have ruled the world for 2,000 years, so chill out. No, I'm kidding. I'm very aware of it. And we were talking earlier before the blog, or before the panel, actually, about how men are... Gender stereotyping is such a way that men cannot be emotional and they can't be complicated and they can't be, like, psycho about relationships without being gay. And, I mean, we're all heterosexual women, so this is clearly, like, a very my blog is very heterosexist. And I have gay readers, and I try to appeal to them every now and again. But I'm not gay, so that's the problem. But, yeah, it's definitely, it's a privilege of that comes with the territory, I think.
But I think women would be fascinated to read what men really think of dating, in the same way that women's magazines make a fortune with cover lines, what he really thinks, what he means by this. I think that there's a great opening for that.
I think there are some gay male dating and sex blogs, not maybe as popular, but I think it kind of goes to the reason why there really aren't that many male sex columnists that aren't, like, advice columnists. And I think, like, if the male, straight male dating blogger is, like, the Tucker Max or the Eric Schaefer, which are, like, I mean, I think there is room for someone writing about dating from a male perspective that's not, I don't know what word you want to use, like, sleazy or sexist, but I do think that there is a perception that if men wrote about some of the things they were thinking, that some of the same things that we're talking about, like the barriers to, like, getting a second date with someone. I mean, I don't know if that would also have to be anonymous if they were really honest.
There is Glamour does actually have a male dating columnist in the magazine and has had for centuries, really. Yeah. And you know, they replace him. He's anonymous. He's been called Jake for, like, I don't know, 50
Jakes.
Years. Yeah. But I think that Melanie's point is, just speaking as someone who's been in the magazine industry as Emily has for a long time, I think that what Melanie said is really true, that I think, you know, Men's Health or Esquire, or, you know, I think that for them to have a male dating columnist that was not writing about conquest would be, you know, antithetical to what they sort of encourage men, how they encourage men to behave. As to why, you know, Out or The Advocate doesn't have one, that I think would be great. So
I was wondering, what are the standards for the owning your rights for your blog versus sex advice column and that sort of thing, and compensation, blogging versus, you know, print, and how you can negotiate in your favor?
I think it just depends how you negotiate it. Like, I had some good, smart people in the industry who helped me. You know, we came up with something that worked for Glamour and worked for me, but originally I didn't know, and Glamour was going to own everything. I think you go in with an agent or a lawyer and you figure it out. And like a freelance, like I'm paid, I have like a month, I think it's like a weekly rate. It's like a freelance thing.
And so you can, if you wanted to write a book using your column material or your blog material,
I have to do it with Glamour. Okay. But I could have been probably smarter in my negotiations. This is my first experience.
The whole new thing is as blogging. They don't have their experience either.
Right. If you're doing it for a major publication like Glamour and Rebic, chances are, I mean, I negotiated the rights as well, but you're going to have to credit the magazine at some point.
Yeah.
You don't, because it's under their ages.
I think we're just going to have to take one last question. Which is you.
I'm sorry. I missed the early part, but do you have data on how many men versus women percentage-wise read your blogs? You don't? Not even through the comments?
I get like 100 comments a day, and one maybe is from a guy, and I'm pretty sure he's gay. But I wish there were more guys.
But that doesn't mean guys aren't reading.
Exactly.
My comments are like 50-50 men, women, but I don't know. Maybe I have like 10 men who are really vocal and 100 women who aren't, so I don't know.
Guys are really scared to comment. They don't understand that that they're not going to be found out, even if they they say like Ellen
like
from New York
mom.
Or whatever. That they don't get it.
Well, I really want to thank all of you for coming out, the panelists as well as the audience.